This is Talking Heads on Manx Radio. I'm Stu Peters, and between now and 2 o'clock, we're chatting to another candidate in September's election. Joining me now in the studio is candidate for Douglas West, Chris Thomas, who's standing on a Liberal Vanin Party ticket. In the pursuit of fairness, we're not asking for contributions this hour, so no calls, texts or emails. Thanks. Chris, welcome to Talking Heads. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Good afternoon. I'm from the island in the sense that I moved here and lived here for some years now. I'm a Liberal Vanin candidate. I'm qualified as a financial analyst and came to the island to pursue my other profession, which was as a university lecturer at the International Business School.
Right. Okay, so a financial analyst. Ooh, so it's your trouble that the world's all gone mad, is it?
I guess finance people need to reflect on what they've done and what they've achieved, and obviously risks have actually materialised in the last 7 or 8 years. So it's not the happiest or time to be a financial analyst. But I don't think I can take the blame personally.
No, I expect that's probably fair. Why Liberal Vanin? Why not stand as an independent with your own policies?
Because it's important to have party politics. I mean, one of the excellent questions that Manx Radio asked us to address on your website was, you know, why we wanted to be a member of the House of Keys. And basically, I answered that in terms of party politics as well. You know, I want to be one of the Liberal Vanin team that is working inside and outside the House of Keys, inside and outside government, to contribute to better government through implementation of the Liberal programme that the party is offering in its manifesto.
So it's not that you've not got any ideas of your own, it's not that you're a yes man to somebody else's policies.
Quite the opposite, in the sense that when you join a party, you join with other people and you have a philosophy and you have an approach, and then you work out detailed policy. And with respect to individuals, I think gathering together as a team means that we can be more effective developing a programme for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, come September the 30th, I think we can be more effective working together as a team to form the government. And then whether we're in the government or outside the government, we can be more, and assuming, taking the privilege of making the assumption that people of Douglas West might trust me to be their MHK, we can then work together to either be in government or monitor government.
Do you think party politics can work in the Isle of Man? Do you think it's something that we ought to work towards?
Obviously, there are problems with party politics, and, you know, people worry that what we're talking about is adversarial government and opposition, like we see on television in Westminster, and people shouting at each other and people complaining and people blaming each other. That's not why it works. Why the Isle of Man needs at least an alternative policy grouping, as we've had a number of times in the Isle of Man's recent history, is that, you know, some people have suggested that effectively we have a quasi one-party state, given the closeness of the Council of Ministers and given that practically every MHK is in government in some way.
Yes.
So we only have the civil service and the current politicians thinking for us and acting for us. And what I was convinced of, and what my colleagues in the party are convinced of, is that we do need an alternative policy formulation, development and implementation process.
Well, the thing about the one-party state by patronage, which your party leader is very keen on talking about, is that if we've got a good government, then that works well, because it means that we can all be of a mind and we can all move together.
Mm-hmm.
The worry about party politics is that it will be divisive at a time that we actually need a forward-thinking government to get mm-hmm. us out of the hole that we're in.
Well, that's the risk, but and I've known Peter Caron for a number of years, and lots of people have joined with Peter Caron to form this party, and you know, to his credit, he has stood alone, and he has gone and gathered people who don't think exactly like him into a party, and he should take the credit for both of those things. So I don't see him as necessarily a divisive person. In fact, I see him as a constructive person moving forward, and, you know, he should take the credit for gathering together people who share the view of party, the need for party politics and the need for alternative policy. And he's gathered together quite a broad church, and that's why it's been quite rich and valuable as we've put together the party manifesto.
And is dissent allowed within the Lib Vans?
Very much. And I hypothetically asked the question, you know, would Liberal Vanin carry on if Peter Caron wasn't involved? And the answer clearly amongst the membership that I heard is yes.
Right.
I mean, the party is the party, and that's why we formed it.
How long is it since you first decided that you wanted to become an MHK? Because you've declared fairly late, haven't you?
Okay. I think I probably decided some months ago, but I was actually, through work commitments, was unable to be, you know, working regularly in the constituency, talking to people and engaging in national politics debate. So the party decided it was best to leave my candidacy until I had 7 weeks to focus solely on my role as economics and business spokesman and my role as persuading the people of Douglas West that I'm worth listening to, and I would be a trusted MHK for them on September the 29th and thereafter.
Well, as you say, you're the LVP's economics and business spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the island's current financial position?
That the private sector and the business sector and the finance sector and the people working in it should be congratulated. Furthermore, there are many good things that the government has done, and I can identify some of those specifically. You know, but we do have a problem of our success in that we have the government and we collectively have made some ill-judged decisions, which, you know, in the time of a boom, it's easy to brush aside and to pretend that they haven't been ill-judged. But now it's becoming trickier with the with the reduction in revenue that will happen in the next few years and has happened in the last couple of years.
How do you see our relations with the UK? Do you think they're an evil enemy, or do you think that we need to work closer with them?
It's clear that we have to work closely with the Crown and with its advisors, the UK government, and so on, because you know, we're close. We are a British island, and we're close to Britain. So I like to understand the other point of view always, and, you know, to me it's quite logical that eventually a country that once was much richer than us and has now become poorer than us is going to look for more equality.
Absolutely.
And so therefore I'm not a UK basher. What I think is that we do need to announce that we're prepared to abrogate from our side the revenue sharing agreement, and we are prepared to have a greater degree of self-determination and self-confidence in a whole range of areas, but it's about working with your neighbours and placing yourself inside the international community. It's not aggressive.
I have to say, over the last 2 years, I've felt very much that it's quite understandable the way that the UK government has treated us, I think, in that, you know, they are skint and in debt up to their eyeballs,
mm-hmm.
And we've at least got a positive balance in the bank. So it's only natural that they're going to look at every possible area of spending and try and save money, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that it's fair, then, what's happened as far as the VAT sharing arrangement's concerned? Because that's been published now, the way that it's going to work in the future. So do you think it's a fair deal for the island?
Well, as an opposition alternative policy group, we can't know the full detail. You know, one of the things that's quite important to our policy is that freedom of information and greater scrutiny of the House of Keys, by the House of Keys, of the government. So we can't know the detail as much as Mrs. Crane and the council ministers can. But, you know, our feeling is that we should consider and announce to the UK that within a 3 or 4 year time frame we would adopt a more self-managed revenue raising mechanism, which implicitly means that it might not involve revenue sharing with the UK. So we think that we should be more self-confident in that respect.
So you're suggesting that abrogation is maybe the future for us?
Mm-hmm. And the Treasury Minister has raised questions about customs barriers, but we have quite a precise policy on, you know, that's not the insurmountable issue that she suggested, and we have a policy and a framework for investigation and for negotiation following analysis and working out what are in the interests of the island to actually deal with that issue. So we've been in touch with lawyers in respect of EFTA application or some sort of association agreement through the UK or whatever with other trade partners. Obviously we're not a sovereign country, But, you know, since, well, perhaps for 15 years now, we have been acquiring the characteristics of sovereignty, especially in the areas of tax and financial services and the like, and the government should take credit for that. Yes. You know, it's incredible what they did with the Isle of Man letter at the time of the first discussions about information exchange, and it's incredible how many tax information exchange agreements. My most recent job was in Vietnam, and we were having a seminar on IOSCO, Multilateral Memorandum of Understanding, and I always do mention the Isle of Man when I'm working, because I, you know, I feel this island as home, and I'm proud of it. But I was shocked and surprised, but very pleasantly surprised, when the chairman of the Malaysian Securities Commission put up a slide identifying the Financial Supervision Commission as having been instrumental and cooperative and excellent in investigating a Malaysian securities fraud.
Right.
And so, you know, the Isle of Man has really arrived.
Yes.
This morning, we got sent this email about this YouTube joking program about from America about, you know, the Isle of Man, AAA America, AA.
Oh, the
plus.
John Stewart thing.
John Stewart one, and that's that. You know, we should be proud of that.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. Yeah, I noticed also in the news this morning that George Osborne is suggesting that the UK ought to be a lower tax jurisdiction, which is quite interesting.
There you go. Quite clearly, our policy is that there's certain parts of the political and economic culture that you know, we all agree with and we all believe in, and competitive taxation is one of them. But the other part of the culture of the Isle of Man is we do have a large public sector, and we do have generous provision for benefits and for welfare more generally, and that's also part of the culture. So
everybody says that the next 5 years is going to be very tough for the Isle of Man. Nobody's quite sure how tough and how it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. What's your view on it?
It will be tough, but, you know, another thing that the Isle of Man can take the credit for is between 2001 and 2006, they managed to save over £100 million to add to their large reserves that they already had. So, you know, we do have that cushion of reserves, and one of our policies, I believe, is that in the next few years we will be able to use those reserves to smooth the transition, and most of the expenditure reductions can be in better management and better administration of the public and civil service, rather than in reduction in any way in the very valuable and worthwhile frontline services that we have.
The problem about that is that rainy day money is money that you can only spend once, isn't it?
But you know, how much do you need to save? How much do you need to have in savings? It's a question that any householder would ask if they got to a rainy day, and we're in a rainy day. You know, do you need 60%? Do you need 30%? And I think our policy was that we can do with the whole point of having rainy day money is you spend it in a rainy day. And you know, you don't keep it for just because it's there.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
This is Talking Heads, and our studio guest this hour of the programme is Chris Thomas, who's standing as the Liberal Vanin Party candidate for Douglas West in the election. So the next 5 years is going to be tough. We're not really quite sure why. I mean, obviously, we need to save money, and hopefully we need to make money. How can we do either of those things, do you think?
One of our main policies in terms of saving money is that we've got to go back to the report that was produced on the scope and the structure of government in 2006. And, you know, Liberal Vanin is a Liberal party that believes in the market as long as social justice is not affected and as long as market abuses and market failures are addressed. And so, therefore, you know, we're not against the operational aspects of some public services being provided without direct use of government revenues.
What, by the third, by the charities, people like that?
Not even by charities, by contracting out to the private sector and the like. Also, you know, even if you just take government reviews of itself, you know, the Bear Report and the Corporate Leaders Group Report, which the Public Accounts Committee put together, you know, they've identified in recent years that there are improvements that can be made in terms of administration and management. So that's in terms of expenditure. Then in terms of tax, I liked Mr. Sully, the former tax advisor's suggestion that we needed a tax commission. I think he asked, does anybody remember it? And we already had remembered it in Liberal Van Im Party. And our proposal is in 2012, we both have a revitalised, recalled scope and structure of government, and we have a tax commission looking to see, you know, where we can get revenue. I've said already that we are a competitive taxation party, and the Isle of Man has a culture and a history of low taxation, but we need to, if we're considering abrogating the revenue sharing agreement, we need to have a policy. And in terms of generating new sources of economic activity, the main point is that we seem to have an excellent business sector. We have an excellent finance sector. We've had entrepreneurs working successfully in aerospace, and I know that there are some in the food industry and in things. And basically, a Liberal banning policy is that we have to encourage innovation and dynamism and high net worth individuals to come here and the like, as long as they're generous and they care about other people when they get here. And
what do you think about things like the tax cap, £115,000, to people who might earn £10 million?
We have no policy on changing the tax, except perhaps in the 0-10. You know, we've read the consultation paper about thinking about what's allocated to 10% and what the rate is, and what's allocated to 0%. So that's what we would want the tax commission to really, but we're not into soaking the rich. We're a Liberal party that believes in combining the good things about the private sector and celebrating wealth creation as long as social justice is maintained. And
but do you think that things like tax caps are fair?
This is something for the overall society to consider. You know, personally, I started off at 20 quite left wing. You know, if you're not left wing when you're 20, and at that stage, I would have been shocked with my answer in the last couple of minutes. But you know, it's a balance. I don't hear Peter Caron talking about soaking the rich. He's more about making sure that there's good government and the resources that we have are managed.
I'm not
properly
talking about soaking the rich. I don't think that would be fair at all. And we know that, you know, there was the brain drain from Britain, wasn't there, in the 60s, because the Labour government was soaking the rich. Not suggesting that for a minute, but I just wonder whether or not it's fair. And it strikes me that probably it isn't. You know, if somebody who's earning £1 million a year is paying the same tax as somebody who's earning £10 million a year, mm-hmm. that person ought to pay more.
Yeah, thanks for your views, and I'm sure everybody appreciates it. But you know, it's something to be worked out by the whole of society, and we think of ourselves as the centre ground.
But as a politician, isn't your job to influence that? Isn't it to come up with policy on things like that, rather than to always reflect on what the rest of society
I agree with
wants.
You. I agree with you completely, and that's why we're a Liberal party, in the sense that we're not a socialist party, and we're not a conservative party. So we believe in social justice. We actually positively believe in making sure that everybody has equal opportunity, and those who can't take advantage of the prosperity through being disabled or not having, you know, been born in the right place, and so one can take advantage of it. And the flip side of that is that people who are wealthier and earn more, you know, do pay more. But I don't think, we're not into changing the way that we have two tax bands and increasing the higher tax band, and we're not into changing the tax cap. We haven't got a policy on that.
One of the main platforms of the Isle of Man's competitiveness is 0-10, and that mm-hmm. seems to be under constant threat. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's got a future?
I think we have a proposal that we will postpone the abolition of the ARI, I think, you know, from what I said earlier, we have the proposal and the policy that we will form a tax commission to investigate exactly what the savings directive means and what the code of business taxation means, and so on and so on. But I do think it has a future. I'm a bit off air, we were talking about, perhaps it was on air even, that the fact that through the action of the places like the Isle of Man, 20 years, there's been a downward pressure on all countries in respect to their taxes, yeah. And now most countries are finding problems to finance their expenditure. So, obviously we're under pressure, but this country has a 200-300 year history of having a lower tax regime, part historically to historically to mitigate the effects of having to come here and live here and the unpleasantness of living here. And now, you know, now the government's had wealth created by the finance sector and the business sector, it's actually a pleasant place to live, and we've got a high quality of life, and people here like living here. Now, you know, you can't change, people came here because of the low tax regime, and you can't change that. That's not what Liberal Vanian's advocating.
You sound as though you've had a fairly jet-set career. You've travelled abroad a lot for work. You were saying earlier on about being in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Does the Isle of Man have strong enough connections, do you think, internationally?
Yes.
Are we represented enough internationally?
Oh, I see what you mean. I mean, one of our proposals is that we work with the Crown to think about how the Lieutenant Governor, we could take up his offer to change his role slightly, because, for instance, when I was in Vietnam, you know, Australia sent the Governor General to Vietnam to promote Australian trade and business, so that would be an interesting policy initiative if that's acceptable to those involved. But and as I've said earlier, that, you know, I know from working in different securities commissions and central banks that the Isle of Man is known in the community. Yeah. You know, we should all be proud that the Commonwealth Games Association is bringing the Commonwealth Youth Games here. I mean, it's symbolic of the island's emerging self-confidence that it had the confidence to bid for such an event. And, you know, we can be proud that we've managed to gather together the volunteers.
Do you think that we shout enough about things like that? You know, you ask most people in most of the world about the Isle of Man. I'm thinking back to that John Stewart thing that you mentioned that was on TV.
Yeah.
Not a clue where we were, really. Most people think that we're down near the Isle of Wight somewhere at best, or one of the Channel Islands.
Yeah.
I just wonder whether or not the Isle of Man's got a high enough profile for the right reasons, i.e. not being a grubby tax haven, and not just having cats with no tails, and not just having the Laxi Wheel and motorbike racing.
Yeah, we can always do better. And I think that business people, as they've been so successful transforming this country's economy through growing it, through doubling it every 10 years, we should perhaps try to involve the business people in promoting us more. But I'm not going to be led by you to criticise us, because my perception is that, in actual fact, to their surprise, you know, that they, when I meet people in China or Vietnam or wherever I'm working, you know, they have heard of the Isle of Man. What shocks them is to find out that it's only got 80,000 people. Yeah. You know, they are surprised that we have our own money and our own legal system and our own financial sector, despite the fact that we're smaller than the village in China or something like that. So in that sense, I have to disagree slightly. And secondly, I mean, yesterday on your Sunday programme, Roger Watterson was talking to Mr. Kane from Ramsey, and he was saying that, you know, historically the Isle of Man's tried to keep itself out of the eyes of America and the EU, and so we have to always be careful that we don't come across as showing off and lauding our success and so on, because, you know, one of the characteristics of the Manx people and politics is that modesty as well.
Modesty or the Manx crab syndrome is the other thought, I suppose. It sounds as though you've enjoyed a fairly glittering career so far, and you've already been elected as spokesman for your party. Will you be concentrating more on national issues, do you think, the constituency ones? Are you able and equipped to deal with potholes at the end of people's roads?
I think it's very important to combine both those roles. And potholes are important. However, most local issues require two things. First of all, they require somebody who understands how to solve the problem. So an MHK has got a role in making sure that if it's the Douglas Corporation's responsibility, or if it's some another body's responsibility, you need to work with people. You need to work hard to solve those local issues. But in fact, you know, my perception at the moment is that the people in Douglas West actually care about issues that you can only really solve through a national approach. You know, the cost of living requires something to be developed about freight costs and transport costs, and electricity costs need something to be done about the Manx Electricity Authority. And if we're going to develop the promenade and Nobles Park, we need to have a good national urban development, economic development, transport, environment policy to create money which will make living in West Douglas better. So, you know, I hope in that sense all Liberal Vanian MHKs and then people who sit on the council, because obviously we will have, after April 2012, councillors again, I'm sure. You know, it's our job to work locally and nationally for the good of people. It's hard, really, to separate your identity from what's local and what's national.
Do you think more ought to be left, though, to the local authorities? I mean, do you think that things like that ought to be left more to the local authorities to deal with, and release the MHKs for looking after us internationally?
Yes, in one sense, but, you know, there are 24 MHKs, which is a lot of MHKs. And we had a week or so ago, the party had a visitor from Northern Ireland, and he has 70,000 constituencies, and Liberal parties have a tradition of looking after their constituents. And he seemed to manage looking after local issues for 70,000 people. So in a way, you know, no MHK with only 3,400 people to look after has really got an excuse not to get equality and fair treatment for their own constituents and their own bodies.
We're out of time now, Chris, but tell the people of Douglas West why they should vote for Chris Thomas come September the 29th.
Chris Thomas is a Liberal Vanin Party candidate who's worked with Peter Caron and colleagues, and it would be my privilege to serve as MHK in Douglas West, both ensuring fair treatment for all Douglas West constituents and contributing to national politics, developing, implementing government policy, or scrutinising and monitoring government's work. I think you could tell that last bit was prepared, but it's honest.
Just slightly. Chris Thomas, it's been lovely to meet you, and it's been nice to talk to you. I'm sure we'll talk again before September.
Thanks very much, Joe.